On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we welcome in the Las Vegas Review-Journal's Heidi Feng, who returned for us. The good, the bad, the ugly from the Kansas City Chiefs game on Sunday. A lot of bad, even more ugly. We look at Tim Brown's comments about the Raider drama, look ahead to Bengals versus Raiders, and of course, what up, Windbags? And we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares. The Raiders!
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, R.J. Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. R.J. Clifford, Juan Soto, let's have some fun today. Raiders sitting at 5-4, over halfway through the season. Where did the time go? Soto, 18-week regular season. And I'm like, oh, man, it's going to drag on. It's going to go on forever. Nope. Flew by. And I also like how the Raiders have sunk like 7 seasons worth of drama and issues into just the first half of off season, very Raiders fashion of us.
Yeah, it's definitely something that where you should be used to, but how do you get used to something this bad? Mm-hmm. We have drama normally. Normally it's like who got beaten up and, you know, put in a coma in our parking lot type of thing.
Sure.
But this is like self-inflicted wounds. Most of them, you know, Gruden can't keep his shit straight. Fucking Ruggs can't make a proper decision to save his. I don't want to say that. That was in poor taste to say that rest of that sentence. And then Arnett is just, you know, wanting to just get cut because give his Snapchat some clout.
But the street cred Damon Arnett got, bro. The street
cred. It's true, bro. It's true.
You can't put a price on that. It's impossible.
It's true.
Except for the $3 million in salary cap of dead money that we now have with Damon Arnett. But with all that being said, we're still 5-4 and it feels bad, right? Lost 2 in a row, started 3-0, all that kind of drama started to happen with Gruden, lost 2 in a row, Gruden disappeared 1-2. It's been a roller coaster, right?
Yeah, a lot of stuff.
And we're trying to make it, you know, like, and we do this so often where we're in immediate panic mode or immediate jerk ourselves off mode. Like, oh, we won 2 in a row. Oh, we're going to the Super Bowl. Oh, we're so amazing. And then we go, oh, we lost 2 in a row. Oh, hit the panic button. Oh, man, it's terrible. Oh, overhaul the team. And that's been the case with us, right? And so it was nice when Mr. Raider himself, Tim Brown, chimed in on everything that's going on. Just kind of put a little bit of context and experience into losing Ruggs, losing Arnett, losing Gruden, losing the front office, all that kind of stuff. The man, Mr. 81 Tim Brown, tweeted out Monday. 24 hours later, I'm reminded of the 89 season when in training camp, we lost a starter and a leader on our team. We couldn't visit him or text him to say, I got your back. He was gone forever. It took the team almost half the season to exhale. And he continues, right now, everyone thinks they are okay, but you really aren't. The day will come when you can breathe again and move on. Keep fighting, boys. A better day is ahead. So part of me is like, oh, good. These are the words of wisdom that we need from someone like Tim Brown. Just, you know, not only like a record breaker for the team, but just always like guy that never got in trouble. Just kind of a Mr. Responsible, like leader by example type guy. But this doesn't make me feel better. It took half the season for them to get over losing one starter. We've lost multiple starters for multiple reasons across multiple weeks of the season, including a coach. We don't have half a season to get over it. We don't have a chance to like, we don't want to like look forward to exhaling. You got to be exhaling now. You got to be exhaling yesterday. Because with all the stuff that's happening, it's staggering throughout the season. God only knows when the next thing's going to happen. You got to bite your lower lip and give it hell.
Yeah, man. There's Derek Carr said it a couple weeks ago. Nobody cares. Mm-hmm. And Bill Parcells actually used that. he got it from somebody very, very special, very near and dear to us. He got that saying from someone who I'll tell you who it is in a second. He also got a saying, you are what your record says you are. You're as good as your record, basically.
Yeah.
And it's the same guy that said, just win, baby, and the same guy that said, commitment to excellence. Al Davis was Bill Parcells' mentor. Whenever he was had something going on that was rough, whenever he needed advice on something, he went to Al Davis, and Al Davis told him, look, man, nobody cares. You think you're better than you are? You're not. You're what your record. If you're a 4-4 team, that's who you are.
Yeah.
What are you going to do to get better? And that's how we have to look at it. Did the Chiefs give a shit? Did the Giants give a shit that we were going through all that stuff? No. And they shouldn't. And we shouldn't expect them to. But what we do should expect is for us to play better, because we haven't played very well the last 2 weeks.
So with the two-game losing streak, with the fast start and bad finish, and then the last two seasons where things went, you're the one that likes to panic, right? You're the one that likes to, like, flip out early. So I'm very curious where you stand. Panic button. Scale of 1 to 10. 10 being light everything on fire, salt the earth so nothing grows, move and start over. Mm-hmm. And 1 being everything's awesome. Everything's great. No problems whatsoever. Where do you put the panic button number?
I'm at like a 7-ish.
That's pretty panicky.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's not just.
That's the fire alarm is on, but everyone's kind of looking around confused. Do we leave? Do we not leave? Do I smell smoke? That's 7's pretty high.
Yeah, I'm basing it off of our play the last couple of weeks. And I was at an 8 until I saw the Rams take another shit 2 in a row. So I'm like, okay, if a team, it's possible.
Every good team has taken an absolute dump this season. And most of them worse than the Raiders have.
No, what I'm saying is the Rams have lost 2 games in a row that they should have won.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one, not as bad as us, but they got their shit kicked in this last time against a division rival. Although it was on the road, doesn't matter. They still lost. What I'm saying is once I saw it happen, okay, it's possible for a team to bounce back, and it's because this is the time where you should be getting better. So we need to start getting better, but it needs to happen right now. In order for us to do that, it's not just the fact that we're losing, it's the reason that we're losing that really gets me worried.
All right, well, let's look into the biggest reason why I think you're panicking. The good, the bad, and the ugly from the Chiefs game on Sunday Night Football. Chiefs 41, Raiders 14. Take it away, Juan Soto.
All right, the good, the bad, and the ugly. So we start with the good, as we always do. AJ
We're
Cole,
optimists,
except yeah, you. Right. AJ Cole, I'm a reporter. I am a broadcast journalist.
Mm-hmm.
So AJ Cole forced a fumble, fucking punter.
Awesome.
I mean, it was a stick. It was a form tackle, shoulder right on that ball, and came out no problem.
The two best hits that the Raiders have delivered this season have come from our punter. And Hunter Renfro.
Hunter Renfro. Yeah. Both on fake punts.
The smallest, least athletic-looking receiver and our punter.
Bryan Edwards. 3 catches and 4 targets. 88 yards and a touchdown. He looked really good when he was given the opportunity. Hunter Renfro.
I think with Ruggs gone, Carr was kind of forced to show some extra faith in Bryan Edwards that maybe he doesn't truly have with him. Because remember, Edwards has been dropping some balls towards the midseason, like the middle games of this season. He's been dropping a lot.
I don't agree with that.
He absolutely has.
He had 4 targets. That's not anything more than he's always had all year.
He still went to him in like key moments, right? But it's not like he's gone to Bryan Edwards when Bryan Edwards has been like wide open. Right.
I don't agree with that either. He's made a lot of contested catches this year.
I don't know.
And he also had a very he has a very good yards per reception. So
Bryan Edwards is like double covered on this touchdown catch that he made.
I agree, but I to say that he's getting more attention from Derek Carr is not accurate. He's getting the same amount of targets, about the same amount of yards per reception. So he's not looking at him any more than he normally does.
He's throwing into him when he's double coverage, which he never has before.
Okay, but I understand what you're saying, but you're telling me he's getting more attention from Carr, which I'm saying is inaccurate.
Getting more targets, but he's getting harder passes thrown his way that he normally wouldn't if he had his full roster of receivers.
Okay, if you want to break it down like that, then I agree with you.
That's how it's broken down.
I mean, but the first thing you said was he's getting more attention. It's not true.
Yeah, he is.
Okay, he's not. He's not. He's still got four targets for 88 yards, which is about what he does when he gets targets. He doesn't get enough targets.
And now he's getting double coverage targets, which he never got before.
Okay, well, you know, he's still getting four targets.
Let's move on. We're good.
I mean, what the fuck? You're arguing something that's wrong. I'm not going to sit here and let you think that you're right. Hunter Renfrow.
Oh, Mr. Statistician over here. You throwing up more wrong stats on this show.
It's not about stats. It's about what I'm seeing, and it's just not true. So Hunter Renfrow, 7 catches out of 9 targets, a piddly 46 yards because most of them were little dink and dunks, but mm-hmm. he did get a touchdown. So 7 out of 9, I'll take that. Denzel Perriman, he's a rock and on defense, yeah. 11 tackles, 7 solo, and we're going to have a rare double dip. Jonathan Abram, 10 tackles, 4 solo. We're going to hear from him again.
That's like me with my hot wings and ranch.
Yeah.
Double dip.
You know what? That's a fallacy. You know that, right? On Mythbusters, you don't put any of your germs into the dip when you dip twice.
No?
No, you don't.
Then why am I even double dipping if I'm not spreading my diseases to all my friends and family? What's the point?
Just kiss them on the mouth. Okay, so that's the good. Unfortunately, it's pretty short. The bad, our offensive line was terrible. We ran the ball 14 times for 50 yards. It's 3.5 yards per carry. We gave up 2 sacks. We gave up 5 quarterback hits on top of that. So Carr was hit 7 times basically on only 37 dropbacks.
Yeah.
That's a lot. That's a high percentage.
That's why, that's what's kind of crazy how we still got, 250 yards, 60 yards, whatever it was, like, and 2 touchdowns, considering he was running for his life game long.
That's damn near once out of every 5 dropbacks he's getting hit, either hit or sacked. That's way too much.
Now, and the game plan was to be ball control, dink and dunk. Like, eventually, like, when we got behind, But, like, to do that when we wanted to be like a run first, dink and dunk, quick offense, ball control offense, and still get hit. It's not like he was consistently taking 7 step drops, 5 times a drive, opposite. And still he got cream. I wonder if the like Greg Olsen and Versace and them were like, all right, this O-line's playing terrible this week. Let's be like a little dink and dunk West Coast offense instead of what we do best, going deep. I mean, either way, it didn't work, but it was kind of a departure from what we've been saying, right? Like, Carr in this offense is best when they're slinging.
Yeah, and that they were like you said in the post game show, they were doing to us what we usually do to the Chiefs, is they pack everything in, make sure everything stays in front of him, and forcing him to throw short, and he just wasn't getting the ball out quick enough because he had no time. Also, the bad RD now. In contrast, our D-line had no sacks, only 3 quarterback hits on 50 dropbacks. 3 out of 50. Yeah. That's a big difference.
Doesn't explain everything, but in fairness to Max Crosby, he was getting mauled like the last Xbox on Black Friday. I mean, he was getting held left and right. Every time I really wanted to like look, like I'll show a replay of a play and I'll be like, okay, I know what happened. So I'll kind of like focus my attention on another part of the field. I'm like, oh, what's Max doing? Just getting choke slammed by some tackle, just like getting his shirt ripped off like a fraternity boy at a frat party.
Unfortunately, he's not the only person on the line. And we can't just rely on one person to get pressure on a quarterback.
We do. And when you, we rely on Max and Ngakoue. Like, it's literally our entire defense.
We needed more out of him.
What have I been saying? Our entire defensive success, and by success, I mean being like average, is entirely based on Crosby and Yannick Ngakoue. If they're getting pressure and they're rolling, then our defense is going to be at its best. If just one of them isn't, whole defense is going to collapse.
It's true, and it happened. Okay, the bad continues. Alex Leatherwood, a sixth false start penalty. He leads the NFL in false start penalties.
Hey, a leader in his field. There you go, Alex. What a my man.
Fourth and inches. On fourth and inches, he gets a false start penalty. So I hope all of you Raider apologists who were like, oh, Leatherwood is this and he's that, and he was an Outland Trophy winner and all this shit, can all take that trophy and you know what you can do with it, because he is not a good pro. I don't think either one of our guards, honestly, on like, if you, let's say the Titans or like the Browns, they wouldn't make the roster. They would be like a practice squad guy. They wouldn't even be a backup on a team that has a good offensive line. They would be like barely sniffing the roster. That's how bad these two are.
Leatherwood just wants it too bad. That's why he false starts.
He wants to get penalties too bad.
He wants it too much. He tries.
Maybe he likes the color yellow a little bit.
Right. Maybe it ties his whole outfit together. You know.
Or it's a color.
Isn't that a thing in the gay community where if you put the yellow handkerchief in your back pocket, that means you like to get peed on?
Why the fuck would I know that?
Hold on. Let me ask an expert. Hey, Soto, isn't it true in the gay community if you put a yellow neckerchief, like a handkerchief, in your back pocket, you like to get peed on? I don't know. We'll see.
Also on the bad, Alec Ingold torn ACL out for the year.
Yeah. I'm really curious. I'm really curious how big of a factor that's going to be.
There's certain packages that we like our jumbo packages that he's in on those packages, and whenever he's been given the opportunity, he's delivered pass catching wise. Not so much running the ball, but definitely catching the ball. Our secondary missed four interception opportunities. That cost us 17 points. The only reason it didn't cost us more points is because two of those missed opportunities were on back-to-back plays. Merrick dropped the ball at the goal line, and then Abram just looked up and didn't know what he was looking at.
He was in perfect position. That's what gets me. Abram was right there and like positionally perfect, but just couldn't find the ball.
Also the bad coaching and Carr, they look confused offensively when what they wanted wasn't there. They just looked like they didn't know what to do. It wasn't all Carr. It wasn't all coaching. I think it was a little bit of both. And that they just, you know, 1 for 9 on third down. That's inexcusable. Do you have that soundbite that I put down for Bisaccia?
Obviously, you know, I'll get with Gus on that. But, we wanted to play coverage early. Then we changed up some of the coverages a little bit. I know he had a big day. You know, he's been a pain in the Raiders' side for a long time. And credit to them. They did a good job of getting him in position to make a lot of plays today. So we'll kind of get that figured out as we get going.
So that's from Rich Bisaccia on Monday's press conference.
What the fuck? So the reporter asked. Huh? Yeah, the reporter asked, why was Kelsey so hard for you to cover? He's like, oh, I have to get with Gus on that. What the fuck? You have no clue why he was open? You don't know what we're running? You don't know how we're covering him? You don't know how we adjusted? That's not an answer I wanted to hear from him. That tells me that he's like, hey, go ahead and take the defense. I trust you. That he doesn't know that him not giving an answer, it's very worrisome for me.
I'm a little more forgiving these situations because so often you ask the guy who knows the answer something specific, like something very game plan micro specific, and they're like, they're not gonna tell you, right? Like it's game plan stuff. You gotta play the Chiefs again, right? So they're not gonna, all right. Oh, but you asked? Oh, well, here's playbook number, you know, page 37. Let me show you, right? So when he kind of says stuff like that, I look at that more as just kind of like, I don't want to answer this question, but I'll give you your soundbite because I'm here at a press conference. You could be very right though. Like there's The way it that defense
like,
played,
that's what it sounded like.
Bisaccia could have been completely like, it's possible he was completely clueless. I wouldn't get that. I get that more from how the game went than from Bisaccia's comment, just because, you know, he's playing the media press conference game, you know, like, I don't know.
Is he that savvy media wise, press conference wise? Because honestly, if he would have said, you know what, they did a,
he's been a coach for five decades. I mean, he's done a lot of press conference.
He's been a special teams coach. He's never been a head coach. He's never
still,
really.
He's still done tons of pressers.
How often does the special teams coach?
He did. He in 50 years and all the different. He's been a special teams coach in the NFL for over a decade. That's another 40 years of coaching, where he's talked to reporters, done pressers. He's been savvy with the media. Like
Sean McVay in his 4 years as a head coach has done more press conferences than Rich Bisaccia. I tell you, like, I probably think
in 50 years.
Who talks to the fucking special teams coach? Nobody. Nobody wants to talk to them.
He hasn't been a special teams coach for 50 years. He's done every job you can have in 50 years. He's done one-on-one interviews.
Look,
he's done,
man,
all kinds of shit.
He could have said they found new and inventive ways to get him open. They used him on Max blocking wise, and they leaked him out. We'll have to take a look at that. He did this. He's like, no, I'll have to get with Gus on that. Yeah. That's just,
I'm not gonna tell you because we're gonna play him again.
No. Okay, well, you know what? We'll see. We'll see coming up in a month. See what happens with this fucking defense if they shred us again. All right, that's the bad. Are you ready for the ugly?
It gets worse.
As sure as fuck
does. It gets worse, Soto?
Yeah, the ugly. 1 for 9 on third down. That's absolutely terrible. Now listen to this. Here's the worst part. Worse than that. Now it gets worse than that. We gave up 9. The Chiefs were 9 for 15 on third down. And it gets even worse than that.
It gets uglier?
Because they were the Chiefs were 3 for 3 on fourth down. So in actuality, that's 12 for 15.
12 for 18.
No. Because the third down turns into the fourth down. So on those drives, they were basically 12 for
on 15. Drives you get on drives that they got to the third down. They
still made a fourth down.
They're 12 and 15.
Yeah, it's fucking, yeah. It's fucking, that's inexcusable at this level. We were 1 for 2 in the red zone. 50% is an improvement.
Hey, 50%.
But we only made it 2 times. That's the fucking ugly part.
Yeah.
And DeSean Jackson's fumble on his only catch. That was pretty goddamn ugly. Now we're going to get to the ugliest thing. Uglier than the first time I met a chick off of AOL when I was like in ninth grade.
You've got herpes.
Damn near. Jonathan Abram, his pass defense. Now look, Rory gave me this info and I fact checked it, and it's correct. Jonathan Abram in the game was targeted 9 times. Okay. Mm-hmm. He gave up 9 catches for 127 yards and 2 touchdowns.
You wonder why the Raiders were so hesitant on playing too deep. Like, because that's the defense that's worked against the Chiefs all season long, right? Too deep, yeah. Cover two, too deep. You know why they didn't? Because it has to be Jonathan freaking Abram as one of those two deep guys. And he's such a liability in coverage.
Abram, start bulking up and try to become a linebacker, because you don't have a future in the NFL with playing like this. Oh, but it's only your second full season. Shut the fuck up. I'm tired of hearing that. I'm tired of, oh, well, he missed his first year because he got hurt. And last year was still his first full season. This year, dude, he couldn't cover a bed if he was a blanket. He can't cover. I don't understand how you expect a safety in the NFL to play the position if he can't track the ball in the air. Mm-hmm. He can't. This just goes to how much of an antiquated look at the position both Gruden and Mayock had. That's the old NFL. Maybe 15 – Abram was born 15 years too late. Maybe 15 years ago, that type of player would excel in the NFL. Now, the skill set that he brings and the skill set that Abram lacks cannot play in the NFL. He gets a lot of tackles, and that's great.
I'm not giving up on him forever, considering like he's he knows how to get into position.
He just hasn't
been able to deliver. And also think about it. Like, you have one of the best offensive minds in football ever, one of the best quarterbacks ever, one of the fastest receivers in football, all game planning to target specifically and to expose him. That's a lot. Okay, and yeah, they picked the right guy, right? They picked the right guy, obviously, to do it because it worked. I'm just saying, like, we've seen giant leaps of improvement this season. Not Sunday, and not specifically when the ball's in the air. But there's been enough.
That's where he needs the most improvement.
100%. There's no doubt about it. There's no question.
I don't want to leave this narrative out there that it was all Tyreek Hill catching balls, because you said, oh, he had one of the fastest receivers in it. It was a backup running back that made him look like a fourth grader. That's who caught the deep touchdown pass on him. So it wasn't Tyreek Hill.
That was one of the passes he gave up. Absolutely. And it was bad. Look, I'm not defending his performance. He had everything going against him, and he's made big improvements. I mean, honestly, we're not going to cut him next season, right? So it's like, keep working on him, and if he doesn't get better, fourth season's going to be up, and he's gone. That's the reality of it.
You can't win with that on your team.
Our guest is here. Heidi Faymfield from the Las Vegas Review-Journal joins us now. All right, joining us now, you can catch her on the Las Vegas Review-Journal covering the Raiders, also the Vegas Nation podcast. She's also on 920 AM, one of the best in the biz. Heidi Fang, how you doing?
Oh, back at you, best in the biz. How you doing? I'm doing great. I'm happy to be here with you guys. I'm glad everyone's healthy this time around. Oh, my gosh.
Last time we had you on, Soto had COVID, and he didn't wear a mask. He didn't alert us all. He just showed up to work.
On this Zoom platform?
Yes. Streaming online. Hey, we are still not sure exactly. There's a lot we don't know. I haven't seen the CDC specifically say that you can't get it through a Zoom call. So if anything, this is attempted murder by Soto.
I was trying to microdose you guys, just give you a little bit of time so you guys have built up tolerance.
And we got a special guest over there, too.
My son wanted to make a special appearance. He's here. Headbutt. That was a good headbutt, son. Here you go.
Mark Coleman would be proud.
You stay positive on things, right?
That's a mom who covers football and MMA with the stun.
Solid technique.
Like, no, son, if you're going to headbutt, aim for the nose. Don't go forehead. Right? Go ahead.
No, he went like straight into the hardest part. Like, you know, I'll work on it. Technique is everything.
Jonathan Abram that.
Yeah. So this weird time in the season, Heidi, right? I mean, started out 3-0, lost 2 in a row, Gruden's gone, won 2 in a row, lost Ruggs, lost 2 in a row, got completely embarrassed by the Chiefs on Sunday night. Passing game is still great, still winning records, still easily within shooting distance of winning the AFC West. It's just a lot to digest at the halfway point in the season. Like, if an alien came down and asked, how are the Raiders doing right now? Like, what would you tell them?
This is silver. This is black. You mix them together, they attack. I don't know. I'm trying to think of something catchy for you. But, basically right now, it's every day is you are hoping there's not going to be another incident, because you don't know how much more this team can take, in all seriousness. It's like the compartmentalizing of everything and them trying to move on and trying to make things happen. It's just, I think, really difficult for them to continually have to press forward. Honey, the tree stays on, okay? Mommy's talking. the tree. The tree has to stay on, my boy. I'm sorry.
Looks great. Looks great, Kristen.
It looks great. Yeah, it's part of my. Look at the tree there. You want it to stay on, right? Because it looks all pretty.
Looks great. Finally, adding some ambiance to the show, as opposed to like my clothes in the background. At least you got something nice.
ambiance right here.
Penitentiary background here. Before, the flag was just all white. I thought I was in a jail cell.
It's a sterile jail cell because of his COVID history.
But basically, I mean, to answer, I'm sorry, I didn't finish answering your question. It's just
Alex
that.
Song.
All right, here, wait. I'm sorry, guys.
Hippopotamus.
You want a hippopotamus? He's going to get a hippopotamus, and we'll, here you go. Hippopotamus for Christmas. Yay.
There you go.
They have a lot going on. And for them to be able to, like, win when they had, and then for Bisaccia to pull off those, you know, couple wins, I think everyone was ready to salute him and be like, yeah, you know, it's that situation's over. And then what happens with Ruggs, that I think was really deflating for the team, not just in the sense of the emotions of it all and then trying to move on as, you know, being NFL athletes where you have to play at the highest level, but then on top of it, you're missing a guy who was able to take the top off of defenses, and you don't have somebody that is there to replace him. And you have great assets like Waller, and you have great assets like Hunter Renfrow, but then trying to constantly target those guys, waiting for Edwards to make that next level step and jump in and be available. You know, I think we did see flashes of him, and we could see him come on really strong as it goes into, you know,
Mommy, I want the
phone. He's heavy. He's like a tank.
Nice.
I want the phone.
Relax. Need a fullback too.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Alec Ingold getting hurt. That's another loss.
That's a big one.
He's the captain too. So it's another deflating thing within, you know, the org. I see you. So that's just another deflating thing for them. I'm sorry, guys.
It's all good.
No problem. So you're in the facility, right? So you're like boots on the ground. Cause when I hear, you know, Bisaccia talk, Carr talk, the other players, like, I'm hearing what I want to hear. Like, hey, yeah, no one cares. We got to move on. We're just worried about this weekend. We have, you know, we have a team that cares about each other. We could overcome this. No problem. Right. They're saying all the things I want to hear. Do you feel like that's truly how they are in the facility? Like, is that truly how they are? Or are they just telling RJ what he wants to hear?
Right. You know, I think for in some cases it is how they are. Like, I don't think Derek Carr has any ability to lie within him. I think he's 100% Boy Scout when it comes down to it. And he's been the face of this team that has been trying to get everyone to rally around everything that's been going on. And he's had the one, been the one that the next day after Ruggs had the fatal car crash that took a woman's life, he was the one taking the podium and having to speak to others. So the fact that he's been able to continually be the face and try to lift up everybody around him, I think that that's a testament just to who he is. And I think that that's just been remarkable how he's handled it. And I, you know, I've been critical of him in the past, and it's not like, and I'm going to sit here and throw up roses for everyone and just, you know, but in the cases that he's been in and the situations that he's been in, I think that's 100% what you see is what you get. And as far as Bisaccia goes, you know, I think he's on the curve learning as he goes. I think every situation he's taking it as best he can and trying to say, okay, what would a guy do in this situation as a head coach? Because he's been, you know, in the NFL for decades, but yeah, to take on the role and assume the role of a head coach and a big boisterous personality who leaves a void behind in John Gruden, you know, it's difficult to fill those shoes in any kind of way that you want to mince it. So I think he's just doing the best he can. And the other guys, as far as their demeanor and how they've been around the field and around practice and what I've seen, you've seen him kind of in, you know, the team at points that you've seen real highs from them. You'll see them joke. You'll see, like, Kenyon Drake came out with the you know, helmet from Stormtroopers. And, you know, Denzel Perryman's out there wearing the Deadpool mask. I call it Spider-Man, but I think it looked a little like Spider-Man, like with the eyes. But
from a distance, yeah.
He says it's Deadpool, says Deadpool. I'm not going to mess with Denzel Perryman, but he says it's Deadpool.
Yeah.
Done. Anyway. But, you know, you think they've had their good days and then they've had their bad days, you know, just like, as you can imagine. But one thing I really miss, RJ and Juan, is being able to have the access to the locker rooms, because that would really tell you the temperament after a game of how they're absorbing this, who they're talking to, how they're trying to get around you know, the issues as a team. You can see all that vibe when you're in the locker room. And unfortunately, because of the COVID era, we're not able to see all of that stuff right now as much as we'd like to. So, yeah, I mean, we are able to see them in the media appearances when they're warming up on the field during the practice reps that we get to see. So you can see some interaction. And for the most part, I think they're all really dealing with it the best that you can expect.
So with all that's happened, I mean, we have to turn it around right away. You know, we have 8 games left. A 4-4 going down the stretch is not going to cut it. I think we have to get to probably with 17 games, maybe like 11 wins. 10 is going to be like fringy, but 11 is like, okay, you're going to make the playoffs. We have to turn it on right now. Do they have enough left to be able to get there?
That's a tough question. And I think within the division, if you think there, it's really anybody's game right now, because you have 3 teams that have 5 wins and you got the Chiefs with 6. And it was really crucial that they took the upper hand in the game on Sunday night, which was a complete disaster. There's no other way to say it. It was just a debacle, and continually watching that train wreck until you just couldn't watch no more. But when you think about it, they are 5-4. You think about the Bengals ahead, then you have Dallas, and there's going to be some challenges, I think, in facing Cleveland on the road, and you have the Colts, and they're going to be very physical. So you have to think about how they approach those, but you can't think, obviously, as a team too far ahead. You have to deal with, what did we do against the Chiefs, and how do we correct that before you can get into everything that happens down the road? But Cincinnati is a big test. This might be their biggest test coming up ahead. I mean, Cincinnati, you know, if you remember back when they faced the Browns, they had 41 scored against them, and then they had the bye. So did they right their ship in between that loss that they had, where I think they only scored 16 points, if I remember right? And how do they come out after having faced that kind of loss within their own division? So these two teams are both trying to fight right now to save their seasons in this game. It's going to be a big one.
So Peter King, going back to like the, you know, the Damon Arnett, Henry Ruggs issues in Las Vegas, Peter King, I'm sure you said it, kind of opined and kind of put it out there without putting it out there that maybe it's being in Las Vegas, right? Sin City, the Strip, strip clubs everywhere, 24-hour access to booze, clubs, you know, the whole nine yards.
And that's just following you, Heidi. That's not right? even following you. And
that's just a Tuesday night with Heidi.
I kept it off of the gram, okay?
but he's like making the case that, oh, can you know, 20-something-year-old brand-new millionaires be able to handle being in this city? You live there. What do you make of it?
Well, I'm not 20 anymore, but if I were, I might indulge. There's the opportunity to do anything. And when you go out in Vegas and your name means something to people, I've noticed they come to you and cater. I've been to Topgolf, and I know nobody knew who I was. I was just at Topgolf. And I was actually there for a promotional party that was put together ahead of the Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder fight, the third one. And because it was a promotional party, and I don't know if this is normally how they are there, but I mean, they come to you and they just, hey, do you need something more? What can I get you? And then I'm telling you, I must have asked for one beer at one point, and then this beers just kept coming to me, and I was like, no, I'm not even done with this one yet. And she's like, that's okay, we got them coming. And I was just like, man. And, you know, and she said it was for the party that they were just, you know, if that was your drink for that party, because it was part of a promotional thing, they were just like, yeah, okay, we, you know, they paid for 3 hours. Just, you know, here's the beers.
Drink up. Like,
oh, my God. RJ Heaven, right? So, yeah.
Beer flows like wine.
That sounds terrible, Heidi. Oh, my God. How irresponsible of them.
Endless Modelo Especial at my fingertips. So, anyhow, you know, that can happen. I mean, imagine if you're a celebrity and how they would treat you if they find out who you are. And then, you know, you have to know where your cutoff line is. And unfortunately, in this case, it was just really, it was poor judgment everywhere around. I can't even try to defend any of the decisions, not a single one, except to say that, you know, everyone's been young and thought that they were, I guess, it's, you can't even defend it. You know, I just can't. I can't think of a way to honestly, you know, I went out there after the incident happened and I saw that car, you know, Tintor's car, and it stuck with me. I can't shake new stuff like that. And I don't want to get overly emotional here. But, you know, when you see that and you think about it and how it took someone's life that was somebody's mother and daughter and a friend, that's, it takes the wind out of you, really. So
yeah,
that video was hard to watch.
Yeah, but no, it was Vegas.
There was somebody in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We had an attorney on the following show to kind of like, all right, what do you think, you know, he facing legally? And he's like, well, first off, civil court, he's going to lose all his money because he's going to get his ass completely sued by mm-hmm. the family and everybody. And two, he's like, he's 22 years old. I wouldn't be shocked to see him spend his 30th birthday in jail. Like he'll probably be in prison that long. So, you know, it's one of those things where it's, if there's any, you hope for the any kind of silver lining out of this, you hope Ruggs learned his lesson and comes out and becomes a better person after learning the lesson the absolute hardest way. Right. Speaking of Vegas,
Okay, I was just gonna say, I'm sorry. I just wanted, like, is it Vegas? No, I mean, you could really find that kind of trouble anywhere. And if anybody's at a bar and, you know, saying like, hey, do you want to have another? Do you want to have another? It's on the house. Hey, you know, you're Henry Ruggs or whatever. Like, I think that can happen anywhere. But I just wanted to make sure I answered the question before you moved on.
I've blacked out wasted in much smaller cities than Las Vegas, Heidi.
Right.
Trouble's where you find it. Yep. I've been able to find trouble in all kinds of podunk towns in this country.
Rochester, Minnesota, right here.
Yeah, Rochester, what's up?
Definitely doable. Well, speaking of Las Vegas in general, the crowd in Las Vegas at the games, I was very curious this season how it was going to go because it was, you know, the first season. The tickets were through the roof. But so many of them are purchased by like casinos and given to high rollers and obviously a lot of people traveling. I'm not going to lie, Heidi. I've been a little disappointed in the Raiders crowd. They're like applauding at the wrong times. It always seems like it's like a third of the away team. Am I being too hard on them?
Nope. I think that's part of what's happening. Did you guys see, God, what's his name? Drunken Griffin on Twitter. And it was a guy that was really angry because I guess it's a section full of PSL holders and they've been selling off their seats to, and then all these Chiefs fans bought the seats around him. And he was just angry as all get out about all the Chiefs fans. And he even had to put out, cut not an apology, but he said something like, you know, it's, I'm not angry because of, you know, the being sold to opponents. I'm angry because the people are a-holes. the guy, you got to check it out. I'll send you a link if I can. But
is there a worse hell in the world than a primetime game? You got a season ticket and you're surrounded by Chiefs fans you're losing 14-41.
No, I can't imagine.
I can't think of a worse hell.
It's like you're trapped in hell.
It's the same. And they're like the color of flames, right? They're all orange and yellow and like.
They're high-fiving over your head.
And these are new. These are new Raider fans. So like they're not going to have your back if they jump on you. Like they're just going to watch you and like record.
The clapping, I know, I think after the first game, they started putting up signs on like the overhead stuff that says it's third down. We're on
like a laugh track.
Yeah. Shut up. Yeah,
no, it's like a Derek Carr comes out on a video and it says third down offense.
Whoa, that's so bad. That's the type of shit that you do like in London because they don't know the rules. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I don't know, honestly, if it's because there are so many visiting teams coming. Like the Dolphins was the first time I noticed it. There's a lot of teal out there, you know, or whatever that color is that they have. Yeah. But
aquamarine.
You're looking and you're just like, wow, look at the sea of aquamarine. And there's a lot of people and they all bought up right behind the bench and you knew like, okay, well, Miami has a pretty solid fan base. The Steelers, you know, they were away. Ravens, there wasn't really that many, probably because it's so far away. But you got over to the game with the Bears. That's when it was really evident how many Bears fans there were in that place. And they were loud. Like, it wasn't even, like, I don't know how it came off on television. But when like, Carr was trying to operate on, it was really loud in there. So it was like, wow, there's a lot of Bears fans here. Yeah.
On, and you can't even say, like, well, it's because they're losing.
Sneezing, my son. Woof.
That was a good one. That came out of nowhere.
That was good. You're allergic to Bears fans, obviously.
No.
Damn Bears.
Yeah, serious.
What we needed more is that guy just like Al Davis. We needed more of that.
Yeah. He's back. So dope.
That was the silver lining of that Chiefs game. I think I even tweeted it too. I'm like, well, at least we'll always have this guy.
Oh, so good. He had that little smug kind of like look on his face.
Yeah,
like he had the glasses and the hair.
Hair about him, you know.
That was like a look. He was dressed as like a mid-40s, late-40s Al Davis with the turtleneck. That was nice.
Yeah, yeah, he did it upright. He had even like the right rings on his hands, and, you know, all that stuff.
The chain,
he put him in the right
places. Matching bracelet.
Yeah. It's that Brooklyn swagger.
All day, baby, all day. Right?
I hope he's got a good, like, it'd be like an extra 1,000 like silver and black points if he went from like at the beginning of the season, he dressed like super young, like Coach Al Davis. And then like now he's like late 40s. And then by like season, by
liver game, spots,
like, week like 16, 17, or 18, he's got the all white track suit, oxygen tank next to him, the towel over
his. Wore that beanie once and it would look like a condom on his head.
Yep.
You just put it like just on top like this and it would just stick straight up. You remember that? I know you do.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You somehow get like old.
It's like no one can see that I'm laughing because I did this. You guys got me.
We drag down the morals of every guest of our show. We apologize ahead of time.
It's all my fault.
Did you see my moral pedestal? I'm sitting on it.
You are. Thank you. We need it.
I'm gonna prop back up.
Make sure your shoulder's back.
Well, Bengals coming up on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Two teams that are like basically at the exact same crossroads, same record, same position in the division, both on two-game losing streaks. I feel like this is a big crossroads for both teams. How do you think they match up stylistically?
Well, wow, that is interesting because I think they have a pretty decent run defense, you know. And you think about the Raiders' struggles right now against the run. In fact, they kind of lost Ingold and they use him a lot to kind of push the line. So that's going to be difficult, especially on special teams, to fill his void. Yeah. I know that they did bring in, you know, a guy that they were working out. And today I saw Foster Moreau look like he was working still. Like, he did that in the game. Mm-hmm. And I think they may plan to use him again. I don't know how exactly, but in some situations, he took a few reps with Derek Carr and the running backs today. So, and then he went back to the tight ends. So I was like, that's interesting. And then you had just the fact that Ja'Marr Chase is having the season he's on. And he's on fire. He didn't have the best game. And I think, you know, you're going to really have to pay a lot of attention on the defense to how you prevent against him. Like the cover three, as we know, it's, you know, one of those defenses that covers the thirds of the field. And you're looking to see if you can take away, you know, those big deep passes, but you have to be kind of reactionary because it leaves a lot in, you know, the zone. And it, as we saw with Abram, the reaction wasn't what you need it to be, and the tackling was being missed, and Littleton was off in his spots. You know, this is against the Chiefs, so they got to clean that up to be able to press and against this team that also has a really good tight end in Uzuma. So,
T. Higgins is back, right?
T. Higgins should be back.
Oh boy, so, that's kind
of
tough.
Lots of weapons, but Joe Burrow does like to try to force it. You know, he does make some errant throws. He's second most in interceptions right now, or tied with first. He's got like 11, and I think he and Wilson both had 11, right? So they're both right up there at the top. But you know, Mahomes also had 10 going in against the Raiders.
We still got to catch them. We dropped four.
10.
Yeah. We got to catch the interceptions. We dropped four of them.
Right. Yeah, there were some close ones. And then you think about that, and the pressure up front is everything, right? So you saw Max get loose a couple times, and he was almost there. But you got to be able, if that's not working, you got to be able, I think, to look to the running back and make a play there too, instead of staying laser focused on Mahomes. So there's times when, or the quarterback in whatever case. So there were times when I'm watching, I'm like, get off of Mahomes. The ball is out. You know, it's like, go there and make, you know, play on the run. The run defense is bleeding. So, you know, Joe Mixon though, hasn't really been on fire at all. So that's one bonus I think the Raiders had going for them going into this, is that the run game of the Bengals isn't that hot. So you could really try to contain that. And I think if you can hold down Ja'Marr Chase, it's just going to be hard. He's just a natural physical specimen that when he gets out there and he can make a play wherever you put it to him. So
he's electric.
Yeah, the connection that they had, the chemistry, it's just, they already clicked before, and now it's just continuing what they had before. So yeah, watching those two is really mesmerizing to see what they're putting together out there. And Raiders are going to have to be very, very, very on top of the tackles to stay ahead of this one.
Yeah, I'm concerned for one big reason. It's a copycat league, right? And Andy Reid found a way to isolate Abrams deep a lot, and even if he was closer, if it was man coverage, whoever he was on Abram was going deep. It didn't matter who it was. And if they do that, he was targeted 9 times. He gave up 9 catches, 127 yards, 2 touchdowns. He's just not getting better in coverage, and I'm afraid that the teams going forward are going to do the same thing.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it is a copycat league. And what we've seen with Abram is he works really well when he's playing in that box, like almost like a linebacker and a hybrid safety. But I think, like you said, if they take a blueprint over there and with the Bengals and they say, okay, well, how do we exploit that as well? They're going to need to find a way to help him out on the back end, I think, or, try to press forward enough that they're not giving up that deep a pass, like figure out a way to take it away. Like we were talking about 2 high safety looks and how that might work, but then Abram would again be out in space if you have that with Merrig. So it's like Merrig is good, but he's also a rookie, and so it's like you can't
play the whole field.
Yeah,
you have to play the whole field if he's out there with Abram.
Right. So that makes it, I think, difficult to play. And I think somebody, I saw this on Twitter, and I hate when I can't attribute who the person was that wrote it, but somebody said that when there's 2 high safety looks in the Chiefs game, that it was even worse as far as what was given up. So it's like, I guess the cover 3 was working better.
Yeah. Well, when you do 2 high, you have to have Abram in coverage. Mm-hmm. And that's where you don't want Abram to be ever for any reason at all.
He needs to hit the buffets, maybe put on 20-25 and become a linebacker. Just stop with the safety. Just stop. It's not for you. It's not for him.
Yeah. I like him too there. I like him at that position that they have him, working in the box, because he's like, everyone said it before, he's a heat-seeking missile. He's a guy that has a lot of aggression and has a nose for where the football is, when it's kind of, pre-snap and trying to get after whoever has it, So, but when he's getting beat like that, and you don't even try like in the end zone to make a tackle or push or something aggressive to maybe knock that ball loose, okay, he's got his hands on the ball, but if you hit him, is he gonna drop it? That was the one that drove me nuts, was watching that play. I think it was Williams, and making that catch when Mahomes got loose and ran and threw across his body to the corner of the end zone, and you see Jonathan Abram in the corner, and he's just like, that happened, he didn't do that, but I'm saying, like, do something, throw your body in the way, or just try to get a play on the ball. So at the point though, I think when he doesn't have it,
he's a safety that can't track the ball in the air. I don't understand. I was arguing with RJ earlier, you can't win with that. How are you going to win with that?
He's played competently the first 8 games,
right?
No one can defend his play on last Sunday. Like, no one's gonna even try, right?
No,
but he's played average or above average entire season. Now, is this a trend that other offensive coordinators are gonna catch on and be a problem forever, or was him just like, he had a bad shellfish the day before and just played like shit on Sunday? We've heard
MMA fighters said they had bad tacos, right?
Yeah. Diego Sanchez at tuna tartar or beef tartar?
That's what it was. Right? Yes. That one.
Maybe Jonathan Abram was eating lunch with Diego Sanchez.
The tackle thing's not the issue. He had 10 tackles in the game. That's not the problem. The problem is he can't track the ball in the air.
Yeah.
And if teams figure out a way to isolate him like that, it's the same problem he had last year. He just doesn't do it well.
Just to play devil's advocate, I totally get what you're saying, Juan, because I agree with that point that he had a hard time and keeping up as well. And he was getting, you know, obviously he was getting beat. But to RJ's point as well, when you think about the first eight games and the fact that he was also pretty much a rookie, when you consider what he's been through and the torn labrum and the injury and then not having last year, you know, what did he play a total of like 2.5 games before this season? So you think about it and you're like, well, he played all last season.
It was all last year. It was his rookie year was 2 years ago where he played one game.
Okay.
He played almost all of last season, I believe.
Yeah, he was
PFF's worst ranked safety last
year. That's right. 109.2. I remember this now.
Yeah.
His, all right. You actually gave the stat. COVID made me skip a year.
It's all good.
Yeah. But, you know, you think about that and the fact how he came in. And I remember interviewing him in the offseason. We did a piece with him and he was saying how to him, like he just, you know, didn't have the time to absorb all the playbooks because of all the COVID protocols and stuff like that, and how he was really behind because he felt like he wasn't 100% and getting back in and all that. So like, yeah, I felt like after I saw him in the off season and getting conditioned and all of everything that he had been working on, like his strength and his speed and everything else, that this could be a big year for him. And I haven't really given up on him yet because I think he's a guy that we've seen him correct his mistakes from the previous season, because I remember he played now, but no, it was like, basically like, you remember, like he would make a play and then he'd get like hot dog and and then cause a penalty. Right. But he's cleaned that up. And he's cleaned up a lot of other things that he did. And then he moved into this new system and he's in this new position that is really working for him. And well, not new position, but, you know, playing in the cover three, I think has really suited him. And it's simple and it's not as complex as Gunther's system was. So when you think all of that stuff over and then how he has corrected that, that maybe there's still some hope for him. So I wouldn't give up on him just yet.
Check out her work at the Las Vegas Review Journal. You can give her a follow on Twitter as well, at Heidi Fang, one of the best in the biz. Heidi, this is great. Thanks for coming on again. Thanks for introducing us to your son, too. Someone who finally took some sense on this show.
He wouldn't have it any other way, it would seem. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Heidi.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Heidi. Appreciate it. All right. Coming up. What are you laughing at?
People don't know that I did the countdown for you. Kind of caught you off guard.
I was going to click the banner. I'm glad you got a kick out of it as we pull the curtain back a little bit. Bengals Raiders coming up. CBS game, afternoon window on Sunday. Back to just regular Sunday football, non-primetime stuff. So I touched on this a little bit with Heidi, but this is where we're at. Like this is how. It's the Raiders and Bengals. It's like the Spider-Man meme of them pointing at each other. Like, these two teams are in exactly the same place. Bengals are 5-4, just like us. Bengals are on a 2-game losing streak, just like us. The Bengals were first in their division just 2 weeks ago. Now they're in third, just like us. The AFC North is a super balanced division where anyone can win it, just like AFC
just
West.
Just like us, yeah.
They've had 2 decades of mediocrity, and now they're starting to flirt with potentially something special, just like us. This is an absolute fork in the road for both teams this season, and maybe even moving beyond. I don't want to make this game sound too big, but the way both these teams are exactly in the same position and what a win can do and what a loss can do, not just for that, you know, that given Sunday and what the, you know, the standings and rankings mean that specific day, but kind of what it does to the psyche and kind of the stopping the bleeding that both teams are going through right now. This game is massive. Also, Bengals 0-5 in games after a bye since 2016, almost like the Raiders, right? 0-4. And they're coming off a bye.
Yeah. This is a really huge game for both teams. If I want to be comfortable with the Raiders making the playoffs this year. The last eight games, we need to go 6-2. 11 wins, and I think we make the playoffs.
11 wins, we definitely make the playoffs. Yeah. 10, I think we're...
The thing, the problem with 10 is there's AFC's a lot of teams where we are. Exactly. There's a lot of teams where we are right now. That's the problem. There's not that elite. Okay, they're going to make it, no problem. These guys suck. We're going to have to jump over a couple of teams here and there. It's a lot of math going to come into play.
But they all kind of play each other, too, a lot, right? Like I said, the AFC North and the AFC West are basically all five-win teams, basically, with like a couple of six-win teams. But obviously, the AFC West plays the AFC North. So, like, we're the first AFC West team the Bengals have played. They still have to play Chiefs, Chargers, Broncos. And then, obviously, we all have to play within the division, right? Yeah. So they're all clustered together, but it's mathematically impossible for like six teams to win like five more games. You know what I'm saying? Like everyone is going to play each other more. All these like 5-6 win teams are going to play each other. So, you know, someone's going to have to lose like eight games, right? Someone's going to probably win six or seven, right? So it's like, it's weird. They're all together, but they're going to have to separate. There's no way all these teams are going to start, you know, keep winning. They play each other too much.
But the thing is, we have to be one of those teams.
That's
I don't think 10 wins. I don't feel comfortable that we're going to get through with 10 wins. So it needs to start now because the schedule doesn't get any easier. The Cowboys at the Cowboys afterwards. That's going to be a tough game. Washington, say what you want about them, but they just beat the fucking Bucks, and it wasn't even that close. Mm-hmm. The Chiefs again. At the Browns, they're up and down. The thing with the Browns that really bothered there's a couple of games that really scare me, and that's the Cowboys, the Browns, and the Colts. Mm-hmm. Because they all do the thing really well that we are very poor at defending, which is running the ball. And they can pretty much dominate us running the ball the way we're playing defense against the run right now. So that's why it's very important for us to get this game. Because if we're down, now we have to go 5-1 the rest of the way to be comfortable making the playoffs. And that's going to be pretty tough. I'm sorry, 5-2.
So the on paper, we're a tough matchup for the Bengals.
We are.
Purely on paper. We're exactly what they don't want to play. They can't run the ball well, which we can't stop the run. So that should be a decent wash.
The thing is Joe Mixon is talented. And we just kind of find a way to make other teams kind of get better on the run. So
they are 24th in rushing. We're 27th in rushing defense. What's going to give, right? Flip side, they are 8th in passing, and we are 12th in passing defense. They are 8th in rushing defense, but we give up on the run quick because we're not that great at it. But they're 24th in passing, and we have one of the best passing offense. We have a top 10 passing offense. So on paper, we should be pretty good. And like Heidi mentioned, Joe Burrow is either has the most interceptions or tied for the most interceptions. He's 11 on the season. And the way that we play three deep, keep everything in front of us, we're not an aggressive defense that's going to get, you know, interceptions from quarterbacks that are tough to get interceptions from. But we can be opportunistic when we're going against literally the worst interception quarterback in the league. So we can – that turnover ratio that we had that was way in our favor early in the season, we've kind of sputtered since then. We should have like a +2 turnover ratio. On Sunday.
Yeah, you know, the turnovers are going to be key against the Bengals. The issue is we could have had three. I mean, I'd say four, but two of them were on back-to-back plays, so you really could. If you got one, you couldn't get the other. We should have had three turnovers against the Chiefs, and those were easy turnovers that we just dropped. They were right in our hands or right in our vicinity, and we could have gotten it. So we need to capitalize. The defense can work against the Bengals because Joe Burrow is that gunslinger. He has that that Justin Herbert same thing that Brett Favre in him. They have that mentality. where fuck it, I'm not going to fucking check down. Like, I don't care what you play. I'm throwing the ball deep. Mm-hmm. And we have to capitalize on the opportunities when we get them, because we do make teams make run a lot of plays to drive the ball down the field when we do get those opportunities to stop those drives on third down. And when we get chances to make turnovers, we have to capitalize.
What's the red zone defense of the Bengals? Red zone scoring percentage, defense. NFL team opponents. 13th. Average, basically average red zone defense. Slightly better than average. I'm very curious to see what it's like not having our fullback in the red zone. I wonder if that forces us to like pass or get cute, or if it really hurts us because they just want to like run it.
If I was them, I would run the ball quite a bit until we show we can stop it, because they don't need to have a lot of pass plays theoretically from their offense to hurt us. T. Higgins. He's no slouch. He was their one last year.
I was talking about us in the red zone. Us offensively in the red zone.
We're best when we run the ball, not in running formations and not in running downs, like we did against the Eagles. We ran the ball much better, and we did it in passing downs and out of passing formations. And when we just line up in that two back set, you know, and on first down with the guys in close and, you know, it's obvious running formation, we don't do well. So we gotta be a little bit better about disguising what we're doing and not be so predictable. And I hate to say that because that was the big thing, the big knock on Gruden, but you can tell on first down against the Chiefs, you're like, oh yeah, we're going to run this ball. You can tell by the formation we're going to run.
Ready some what a Winbacks?
Oh, for show.
Said ho for show. Mr. $20. Crosby and Yannick, too light in the ass. No power. One-dimensional. Crosby needs some new pass rush moves and hit the gym harder. Spin move don't work anymore. Same for Yannick. They're hurting our run defense also. Can't control the edge. Just speed rushers. You can tell Raider Nation's getting really like upset and pissed off with the losing streak when they're bashing Max Crosby and Yannick Ngakoue. Like the two gifts that this team has been begging for 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree with him in this sense. Basically, Max and Yannick are the same player. They're the lighter of theoretically, you would want like a heavier, more stout type of defensive end on one side and then a lighter guy on the other side. They're both the light guys. So, yeah, they are not that great against the run. But I understand what he's trying to say, but beggars can't be choosers, man. For what our defense is and for what our defense needs, we need pressure on the quarterback. So having two of these guys is not a bad thing.
They're literally the only thing keeping this defense competent. Like if without their pressure, this whole thing falls apart. Look what happened last week when they just started holding Max Crosby and Yannick Ngakoue had kind of an off week. Chiefs put up 41 on us. Like, without their rushing pressure, then it's the whole defense falls apart. So, like you're right. Like, I would love for them to be amazing run stoppers as well as pass rushers. But again, like, this defense is in its adolescent phase. Like, it was trash for 20 years.
Yeah.
Now it's competent. It's like, okay, this is working for now. Let everyone do what they're doing now. And then maybe next season was like, okay, how can we build on what we got last season? Let's not drastically alter Yannick and Max at all right now. They got to stay where they are. Kind of a long one. Titus Flavius. If we're to end up with a winning record, we need to win at least 4 more games. If they continue to play as they have the past 2 weeks, which of these upcoming games do we win? Bengals, Cowboys, Washington, Chiefs, Browns, Broncos, Colts, Chargers. Given how the other teams are playing, maybe the Bengals, Browns, and Chargers. That puts us at 8-9. The question is, can this collection of coaches and players turn things around? They collapsed the past 2 seasons without all of the off-field crap going on. I wonder what it's going to take for them to turn things around. So this got me thinking, not so much like the wins-loss record, but how much of this team, like if this team did, let's say we did exactly what we did the last two seasons, right? Started out strong and then imploded late in the season. This team has had so much turnover, both in front office, coaching, and players. I would wonder how we would blame that. Like, this team is so different now. Defensively, completely new defensive coach, completely new scheme. Half the players are new. Gruden's gone, which touched everything. Bisaccia now interim head coach. Most of the starting offensive linemen are new, or at least not starters last, ever. I would wonder, if this thing collapsed again, that's why I was saying I don't see the similarities to the last two seasons of collapsing, because the parts aren't the same. More depth, and they're very different parts. Now, it could happen, right? Like, obviously, with everything that's happened to the Raiders, but I don't see them collapsing for the same reasons they collapsed the last two seasons.
The reasons off the field may be different, but what I'm seeing on the field is the same. We are not very good on third downs offensively or defensively. And we're not that good in the red zone. And our turnover margin has not been good. And those are three things that I can point to in our previous years when we started to do a decline, that those were three things you can look at. We weren't good on third downs, offensively or defensively, and we weren't scoring well in the red zone. And those are two things that really hurt us. Maybe not the red zone issue last week because we didn't get there, but definitely the turnover margin and the offensive defensive third down efficiencies was something that was a big problem for us. So that's why I see similarities going forward. Similarities the last 2 weeks and the possibility of a decline the rest of the year because of those specific reasons. Of course, the off-the-field stuff is different, but on-the-field stuff, a lot of the stuff is the same.
Last one. This one, an email. We actually got an email. What up, Winback? So I had to use it. Tell Soto that anyone can complain, but men try to figure out the problems. Losing sucks, but as a podcast host, look for the positives. Look for the hidden gems for Michael Creamer. Michael Creamer giving you some podcasting advice. So, Soto.
So what's your podcast, Michael Creamer? I'll go ahead and subscribe to that sucker.
The Cream.
Oh, you don't have one? Oh, sweet. If it seems like I'm complaining, then that it's because we're that bad. I'm not saying anything that's not true as far as our team's play. I'm just reporting what I see. And I've tried to give some, just a little bit ago. I say, hey, when we run the ball in more typical pass out of typical passing formations, we tend to do better, like we did against the Eagles. Mm-hmm. That's looking for a solution to our run game. When we line up and in a heavy formation on a run down, we don't do very well. So don't do it. I said it before. Use the short passing game to set up our running game. Losing does suck. As far as the positives moving forward, it's difficult, but I do see some positives. One of the positives is we're in a big jumble with a lot of other teams. That's a double-edged sword because that means it's going to be a lot of teams we have to jump over and a lot of teams that we have to hope kind of take each other out. But the thing is, that doesn't matter if we don't win. And if we play the way we played the last 2 weeks, we're not going to win very many games. So that's the long and short of it. Michael Creamer, I appreciate your feedback. I just don't see that I'm overly negative. If I'm overly negative, it's because I'm just reporting on what I see, and it's because we haven't played well the last 2 weeks.
I don't know if overly negative is the right word. I just say ornery. I think you're ornery.
I'm always like that, though. I mean, shit.
I always love the word ornery because I have no clue how to spell it, so I feel like it's a mystical word. Ornery. I'm convinced no one knows how to spell it. It is an unspellable word.
Ornery.
Like fuchsia.
H-O-N-R-Y, horny?
You're both things.
Ornery and horny? Let's see how to spell it.
Yeah, look up horny, specifically on a work computer, Soto.
O-N-E-R-Y.
O-N-E-R-Y. Onry?
Onry.
I don't believe it.
I'd say right here. Yeah. Wikipedia is telling
me.
Right?
No way to look it up. It's impossible. The word's impossible to spell. No way to look it up.
It's ornery. So O-R-N-E-R-Y. Ornery.
Ornery.
Cantankerous, stubborn, disagreeable. Grandpa.
Cantankerous. I gotta put cantankerous in my vocabulary more often. That's
if we can slip it in the next episode, $5.
Indubitably. You would be punctilious in assuming that, Soto.
Assuming that.
We got a really big couple weeks because we got Bengals on Sunday, Thanksgiving Day football. Mm-hmm. So we should probably do like a Tuesday pod next week instead of a Wednesday. So it's not like just the night before. And then maybe we'll do like a weekend kind of
wrap up.
Yeah. Like we'll do like, so we'll do a lot. We got a lot coming your way coming up in the next week or so. But until then, knock on wood if you're with me. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Autumn Windbags. We really appreciate it. Big thank you to Heidi Fang yet again for joining us. Make sure you check out our YouTube channel. Like, subscribe, and comment. A lot of good stuff on there. And if you want to shoot us an email in our inbox, you can do that at theautumnwindbags@gmail.com. Until next time, later.